Hello, welcome to our podcast, Analyzing the Heat. My name is Michelle, and I am a junior at Cristo Rey San Jose Jesuit High School in San Jose, California. I am joined today by a fellow peer by the name of Marian, here to discuss the key themes, ideas, references, and feelings conveyed by the astounding book that is Fahrenheit 451 by Ray Bradbury.
Thank you, Michelle, for that wonderful intro. How have you liked the book so far?
The book is lit, if you know what I mean.
What a hot joke, Michelle. Oh, want a break from the ads? Hear the short announcement from O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly.
O'Reilly
Auto Parts. Ow! Thanks for listening. Now enjoy the next 15 minutes of ad-free listening online and offline.
Wow, Marian, speaking of offline, United Airlines, it's time to fly. Thanks to O'Reilly and United, you can now enjoy our podcast for free offline on any United Airlines flight. Don't miss this opportunity. Okay, so now let's get down to business. In all seriousness, this book was really interesting. I can't say I was surprised by the ending because I kind of saw it coming, especially because most of the book is reflected in our real life today. That was my broad idea. But overall, Bradbury's main purpose with the book was to illuminate a perfect dystopia, enough that people would see themselves in the book. I saw it especially notable in the characters, as was discussed in in-class discussions, that Clarice symbolizes peculiarness, Mildred and escaping Montag, and having a breaking point in Faber and his silence, that sort of thing.
In my opinion, the book was definitely different from anything I have read so far. It gives off a faint resemblance to The Giver, which is a dystopian novel as well. It amazes me how Ray Bradbury could accurately predict the potential dangers of developing technology. It's almost like the revelation of books. Maybe that's why it was banned.
You know, speaking of banned, do you think that was the biggest theme in the book?
Are you referring to censorship in the book?
Yeah, especially considering how during the book, the majority of the government tends to kind of hide everything from the people. And I'll come back with an example in a few minutes.
Thank you. So yes, I agree that is one of the greatest essential themes in the book, because as you mentioned, it's prominent in everything where the government is trying to impose all of this information to people. And you know how Mildred is constantly listening to her radio, and she's just constantly absorbing this information, as well as the people seeing the ads and in the buses. And it's just something where you can't get your information anywhere else from the government, so definitely.
Now that I think about it, I wouldn't wouldn't burning books be also a major theme? Like, thinking about it, Montag does basically scorch Beatty alive, as all the books were, and it kind of symbolizes him. And at the end, especially like the last pages around like page 116, 130, 116, where he says that Beatty wanted to die. I don't know if he was using this as an excuse or to basically like surround the main idea that he really was he realized that everything around him was getting burned, by burning being the illusion or the symbolism that everything is leaving, everything is not real, everything is vanishing, everything is turning into dust.
Awesome, Michelle. So I would like to connect that a little to some of the rhetorical strategies he did, and in personification that he, the pigeon-winged books died on the porch. And I believe that the books did not literally die, but the knowledge contained in that book was gone forever. No one will ever be able to learn from it. It makes the sentence more vivid and interesting. And how you were explaining, he burned, for example, if you think that they burn books because they gave knowledge, why do you think Montag burned Beatty? What do you think, he was a threat to him? Do you think it was beneficial? He knew that
It's actually really interesting that you asked this question. My group and I had, like, or my literary group had kind of this discussion of if we thought, like, what we thought about Beattie and, like, his reasoning for, like, burning books. And I think Beattie maybe, like, he didn't really symbolize books and, like, their knowledge, but I think that he symbolized the absence of them and how that's what was driving Montauk crazy. Like, it was Beattie symbolizing the absence of books and of that knowledge, and that was scared to really open up for fear of, like, I don't know, the authorities or whatever, whoever may kind of come down on that. And then the people around him and kind of reassuring Beattie is what is what kind of really reassured that point.
Cool, Michelle. Sorry, we were interrupted by Mr. Hosking. Sorry, I have to go back.
Refresh.
Okay, so would you like to move on to important passages, or would you like to, is there something you're desperately wanting to talk about? I could start off if you'd like. Okay. So one of the passages that really impacted me was on page 57. It said, burn all, burn everything, fire is bright, fire is clean. So this passage talks about when something disturbs society, just take it away. Simply turn your cheek the other way, active as problems were non-existent and nothing bad should remain in society. Therefore, everything must be kept perfectly in order to keep happiness. And it sort of connects to today's time where we believe everything should be kept to our standards. When something isn't the way we like it, we immediately throw a fit and find a way to fix it. And I think that was, you know, like, when you have the freedom of technology in your hands, you know, for example, if you go on any social media and you see something that you may not like, you simply swipe away, and then you're like, I don't want to learn about that. Or you have the option of censoring yourself. So I don't know. Any opinions?
What really stood out to me now that you bring that up is an episode we watched of Black Mirror, where
nice.
People are really people are, like, getting raided and kind of don't really have that privacy anymore. If every single move of yours is done and calculated and kind of measured to everyone's standards, and everybody of course has different standards for different things, that is mannerisms, the way you talk, the way you act, the way you stand, all those type of things. So that's actually pretty interesting. Another, like, important passage that I wanted to bring up, obviously, but that I kind of grabbed from, like, last week, but, like, I feel like a lot of the same kind of passages stood out to me. There wasn't, like, throughout the book, it was pretty, the mood was pretty set to be, like, very melancholic and very reflective and kind of suspenseful. But I think obviously that was done on purpose to kind of come to the greater, like, revelation that things are happening. One important passage, obviously, that I found was kind of quote by Montag was that's the good part of dying, when you've nothing to lose, you run any risk you want. And so basically that means that, you know, it was, that symbolized to me how much, like, how the desperation of Montag to really come to terms with what was happening. And it was, like, kind of eye-opening. I didn't realize this was, like, going that far. Obviously the book kind of illuminates all of that, but, like, Montag really emphasizes, like, I feel like you can personally, like, live what he's feeling when he says these things. Like, people talk about dying all the time, but when it, like, really implies you dying and you not caring about, like, death and, like, oblivion and, like, something so big causing you to, like, want to outweigh all those, like, good things in life is so, like, magnificent and incredible to me that, I don't know, I really needed to include that passage.
So, So a final passage I'd like to mention would be on page 55, where it claims, where Beatty is talking to Montag, and he says that we must all be alike, not everyone born free and equal, as the Constitution says, but everyone made equal. So when everyone is alike, there are no barriers or challenging ideas that make them contradict each other. They are all happy. Books are a weapon that destroys the cycle of identicalness and causes brain dead people. And it's crazy to me. I understand that Beatty is getting fed fake information, but he's telling Montag, he's kind of hinting like he knows the reality.
Yeah.
And he knows that everything they do is distorted. So
yeah.
So I don't know. Yeah, exactly. And that was that kind of question, like, okay, how does Beatty all know of these things? So yeah.
So for me, another passage that really stood out and like rang a bell, not only because we've heard it before, but because it brought a whole different meaning now that I finished, like I was on the last pages of the book and I finished it, was the passage that Mr. Hosking obviously gave to us at the beginning of the book before we had even started reading it, which was on page 158, where it says, to everything there is a season, yes, a time to break down and a time to build up, yes, a time to keep silence and a time to speak, yes, all that, but what else, something. So that really stood out to me, especially because obviously I recognized it from like something before and it rang a bell, but it like there was a whole new meaning to it, because you know, you see that these words were in there specifically for that reason, and they were like, before they brought so much different context and I had such like a broader view of what it could mean. I was like, this could literally mean anything, but now that I'm like reading the book, it really narrowed down to like Bradbury's point of like, for everything, like everything happens for a reason, and not necessarily that, but that everyone goes through the ups and downs. And it was kind of reassuring that like at the end Montag was kind of like fine, which was crazy to me, because just the thought of like killing someone, which he like, you know, he basically scorched Beatty alive, and I honestly thought he was gonna like completely go mad after that, but he just like came back down and noticed that like there was people like him and that they were fine and that they were real people. And I just kind of made that connection that he was like human, you know, like Bradbury made him like a human to like illuminate a human, and that he, I don't know, he was living like a real person, and then just killing someone, I don't know, it brought like so much like into a perspective of like not killing, like killing is never okay, but like I mean, like I you understand why he did what he did, and that he like wasn't crazy or wasn't mad, because like in today's society people like to associate like people with like being mad or like doing something, and like in connection to like the immersion trip at Homeboy that I had, you realize that there isn't really bad people, but there's hurt people, which is something I really took from, I'm quoting from Father Greg Boyle. So yeah.
Awesome, thank you. It's all of these passages that we've mentioned I think are really essential to our understanding of the book. But I also, sorry to bring it back to you, Michelle, but your thoughts and ideas that emerged while reading, I think your point was really interesting, and I would like for you just to read that so I could just kind of add to that.
Oh, the passage?
Yeah.
Okay.
About banning the book and why did the government ban it?
Oh, okay. So my main reasoning, or like one of the key themes for like banning, was, you know, safety and like, well, not necessarily safety, because I don't think there's safety in conformity, obviously not. If not, we would all be doing it and there would be no change in the world. But I think like to not upset anyone, and I think I don't know how like this relates to the actual context of like the Cold War and stuff like that, but I realize that like a lot of the people, what Beatty was essentially kind of like, or what everyone kind of does in today's society, or what everyone does in today's society, is basically like hide behind the idea that I'm sorry, I kind of like lost my train of thought. The idea that people are hiding behind the reasoning that to not talk about something that's taboo is to maintain safety, which is like completely the opposite, because obviously if like something's taboo, then that means that we should be talking about it, because it wouldn't have to be like such a like big issue than it was before. Like everyone obviously has a different opinions, but it's just so like annoying and like exasperating that like people refuse to talk about these things that obviously are hurting others, but like if it doesn't apply you, then you won't talk about it.
Thank you. We say thank you after you say something. The point that you wrote down is why would you write a book that no one could read, or would you? After all, any press is good press, they say. And I personally think that a possible answer to this is that the government doesn't want people to realize the threats that we're developing society. So I'm referring to the real life of what was occurring in Ray Bradbury's life. So they most likely knew it would eventually grow into the situation we have now. People started to become more self-centered and fast-paced, and Bradbury caught on to this. He knew that he was going to be considered crazy. And a good example of this would be how Jesus was considered to be an extremist and insane for what he spoke and defended. But to some, we still see the effects of his claims today. And the same goes for Bradbury for depicting how society is pretty much is today during a time where this was not feasible.
Yeah. Did you have any like personal connections with the book?
To be honest, it's just thinking about, it was like, I really connect with the technology part where I see people around me in society, and you see, like we've spoken about, like, seeing little kids connected to their tablets, or like, you know, you see toddlers, and sure, they have educational apps and all that, but as you keep on growing, you see that technology and VR, and you're completely transformed into this virtual reality. And I think in AP seminar we were talking about how gaming, if people feel like they could save the virtual world but not the real world, and I think the government in this book, they try to brainwash people so much so that they don't think that they can break the system. So
yeah. Well, if I'm being completely honest, I really didn't have any direct connection at the beginning, and I just thought the book was pretty interesting, but I think that towards the end I really started connecting with Montag, because he started feeling like he was running out of time, he was running out of so many like resources, and things were changing all around him, especially when he said that like a week ago from like the incident that happened he was completely fine. And I think it's like absolutely mind-boggling, and I feel like that's seen a lot, especially in today's society where things are constantly innovating and it's taking a toll on people's like mental health, which is like a really big concern to me, but I think that's part of evolution and hopefully we can grow into it. But yeah, it's like he'll take the good and the bad from it. And with that we end. What, do you have anything to say?
Yes. Thank you for joining us on our podcast Analyzing the Heat. We have you hope a great day, and you know, read the book, it's lit. Thanks.
Please stop.